Gary, what do you see as being the affirmative case for the resurrection?
Well, Lee, let me state it this way. I do not assume that the Bible's inspired or even that the Bible is reliable as a text. I think we can get to those conclusions. But I like to take the data that critical scholars allow, even non-Christian critical scholars allow, and just say, look, I think we've got a good start in a case for the resurrection. Well, virtually all skeptics, makes no difference if you're a believer or an unbeliever, they put 1 Corinthians, a book that Tim accepts and says is reliable. They put Paul's Creed, this early statement that Tim summarizes on page 427. Paul says, I gave you, listeners from Corinth, I gave you the text, the story of the gospel, which I received. Now, he's writing this in 55 A.D.
And the crucifixion was when?
The crucifixion, give or take a year or two, is about 30 A.D. That's a nice round year. Critics are willing to say that Paul probably got this material about 35 A.D., but Peter and John and James had it before Paul did. And so we're right on top of the events. Gerald O'Collins, a moderate Roman Catholic scholar, says that this material goes back to 30 A.D. And from this, we get a very early account, 30-ish, right on top of the events. We get eyewitnesses. Paul at least is an eyewitness. Then we get Paul, the eyewitness, telling us that James, Peter, and John agree. And then thirdly, we have what I might call, if I want to keep up with the E's here, enthusiasm. Their lives were transformed by their belief that they saw the risen Jesus. People get transformed for a lot of things, but these guys claim they saw the risen Jesus. And fourthly, a fourth E, I believe that Paul implies an empty tomb in 1 Corinthians 15:3 and following. So we have early eyewitnesses who are enthusiastic and willing to die for their message that Jesus appeared to them with an empty tomb.
Okay. Tim, there is a minimalistic case, but a case being made for the resurrection. How do you respond?
Well, now you've mentioned the life-transforming aspect. There are people who've had their lives transformed by converting to Islam. I don't think Dr. Habermas would say that proves that Islam is divinely inspired.
I totally agree with him that anything can cause a life change, usually a religious or political commitment, but anything can cause a transformation. That wasn't my point. My point was that the disciples just weren't changed. They were changed because they believed they saw the risen Jesus. Now, transformations cannot prove what somebody's saying, but transformation can prove that somebody believes what they're teaching. And if we have the earliest apostles teaching that they saw the risen Jesus, we can say they're wrong, but we have their sincere belief that they believe in the risen Jesus, so sincere they're willing to die. I think that's very valuable. When a Muslim dies because he believes in Islam, that's his belief centuries later that Islam is true. But if you go back to the original disciples, they died because they believed they saw the risen Jesus.
Start out with Mark's resurrection appearances. Well, there aren't any, basically. The women, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Salome, go to the tomb. They find an empty young man in white sitting inside, presumably an angel, says Jesus is risen and he'll meet the apostles in Galilee and go tell them. The women are terrified and they don't tell anybody. And that's the end of the account.
There's a supposition here that I want to mention. The idea is that the Gospel of Mark is the earliest, and since there are no appearances, we're in trouble. If that's Tim's not necessarily saying that, but others have said that. First of all, I want to say Mark does have an appearance, maybe more. He says, go tell the disciples and Peter. Some scholars think that that's an intimation of the appearance to Peter earlier, but be that as it may, Mark specifically says he's been raised. But the additional point I'd like to make here, and then I'll see what he says, is his point that Paul predates Mark by 15 or 20 years, and Paul has the longest list of appearances.
Except that Paul just basically gives kind of a summary. He doesn't give a blow-by-blow appearances.
First of all, Tim, if Paul has a summary here, as you just said, you said all we have is a summary in Paul. I want to know what's wrong with the summary. He gives a long list of appearances. If he gives more appearances than any other disciple, I want to know what's wrong with the good list from right on top of the events. If he received this material in 35 A.D., if two of the disciples... If two of the disciples, well, I'm using the dating of the critics. I'll give you a list of them, but these are people who are atheists and people who do not agree with evangelicals, and they put it in the 30s A.D. So if Paul only, quote, has a summary, I'll take that summary, because we can make a case based on that summary alone. It's excellent evidence.
You know, we're running a bit out of time here, so Tim, okay. You know, summarize. You know, if you were to make a closing statement in 30 seconds to a jury, what would you
say? Basically, the statement is that his appearance to the apostles is, Dr. Hibner says there's one in Jerusalem in Matthew, and I say the only one that in Matthew where he appears is to the women, and he appears to the apostles on a mountaintop. And if there were other appearances, you would think that a book purporting to argue for the divinity of Jesus would put all of them in and not leave some out.
Okay. Yeah, Gary, a little bit of a closing statement from you.
Sure. If Paul's the earliest and Paul's the best, and we can build a resurrection case on Paul alone, we've got it.
Okay.
If we can base the resurrection alone on Paul, we don't even need to talk about the Gospels. If Paul can do it, we've got the data.
Okay.
And I think he does.
All right, gentlemen, interesting exchange.